And hello everyone, this is Roderick Z, also known as Bodhi, and I'm going to present a very special episode for you today. I apologize for being a little bit late on uploading this. So this is a collaboration between Hunter Salazar, who's been on this podcast a few times. Hunter Salazar and I, you can actually watch this video or the trilogy of videos of this same discussion. So whether you want to hear the audio version, you can stick around on this platform, or if you want to see the audio video version, you can go on his channel at Hunter Salazar on YouTube and watch us kind of go at it talking about dichotomies and occultism and spirituality. So, and that's what we're going to be talking about. So this is just like a little introduction before the actual show that you're going to hear. And it is uncut and unedited here. On his YouTube channel, it is up in three parts. On here, it's just the whole thing. So I believe it's like an hour and 14 minutes altogether. So it's not the longest of my episodes. I've done some longer ones, but nonetheless, it's packed with a great conversation between the two of us about this. And anyway, I really hope you enjoy this. Be well, be healthy, and I will see you in the next episode really soon.
I'm your host, Hunter Salazar, of course. I'm here with
Roderick Z. What's going on, everybody?
Excellent. Nice to have you back on the channel. And this is going to kind of be a dual thing. So this is going to be on your podcast as well. So what's the plug for your podcast, by the way?
So my podcast is called The Far Side of Midnight, and I am on 6 platforms right now. I'm going to be on 7 within like a month. I'm on Spotify. I'm chuckling for certain reasons. Some of you may know. I'm also on Apple Podcasts. I'm on Anchor. I'm on Breaker. So if you just type in The Far Side of Midnight, don't forget to put the in the beginning. I usually come up on Spotify. So, yeah.
Excellent. Nice to have you here, man.
Thanks, man. Thanks for having me.
No problem, man. And so earlier we were talking about non-dualism versus binary occultism. Did you want to ask me what that is, or do you want me to kind of like...
I do want to ask you. So, we're kind of doing a little warm-up before, and we're talking about duality and occultism. So what is binary occultism? Is that what it was? Binary?
Yes, that is. Yes, okay. For sure. So it's kind of my own term. It's not something that other people use. So, so just to give a basic idea, binary occultism is basically like left-hand path, right-hand path. It is a spectrum. It is a singular line,
okay,
without any definition or dimension to it. And people on either the right-hand path or the left-hand path kind of judge each other based on where they are on the spectrum. And a lot of people like me, usually by their definition, we would be at the center. But I don't feel that's quite correct. Because occultism in general, even when you're working with demons, Belial, Moloch, Azazel. You know, some of these you might say, hey, these are old gods. Sure, at some points, but how do they themselves identify, how they describe themselves? But the word demon is kind of a problem, because if you adopt the dictionary of your enemy, in this case the church, And even if you're trying to reclaim that title, that even that definition or that name, you're still playing by the other side's rules. So somebody who is outside of this game between, you know, demons and angels, somebody who's outside of that, I don't identify with demons or angels. If you're going to talk to me, you're asking me to play the game that you've been playing with your enemy, whichever side you're coming from. So if you're asking me to play that game, if you're asking me to enter that match, you're asking me to basically enter a two-dimensional universe rather than a three-dimensional one or a four-dimensional one or a fifth-dimensional one, because you're using the same terms that your enemy uses for you and you're just trying to reclaim them. So a more correct term for me for demons would be asuras, more complicated than Hinduism. It's not good and evil. And there's plenty of people worship Kalima like me that think that a lot of devas who are thought of as gods are actually asuras. It's way more complicated. And devas and asuras also, they take up different teachings from the Upanishads. So it's way different than the duality of Christianity versus Satanism, Luciferianism, or, you know, left-hand path versus right-hand path. That is an engagement that people try to draw me in on a regular basis. I don't want to be drawn in with those terms. But how many people that contact me when it comes to Satanists or when it comes to people who are demons know the term asuras?
Probably not that many of them, because unless they've worked with some Eastern systems like you and I have, you
know, they're not, but it's really surprisingly more specific than the word demon. So I'm stuck with the terminology that this little fight here in the one-dimensional plane has forced upon me. So what do I do?
Okay, so like I have another question for you. All right, so you presented a really good issue, and I like that, but let's get into the nuts and bolts of this really.
Excellent.
So, all right, so demon is not a really good term for you. So what would be the, I guess a better question would be, what would be the purpose of working with a demon anyway? I mean, I have my own ideas on it, but what, like in your view of, you know, magic and occult spirituality, what would be the reason for that? Or what would be the reason of working with something that has shadow like that? That carries chaos.
Okay, so as a lot of left-hand path practitioners will tell you, demon comes over her daemon. Or like personal spirit, it can be spirit, it can be personal guardian even. It depends on what you're talking about. Because the word demon, a lot of left-hand paths will tell you, you know, it means this. You know, it's your personal spirit, your personal guardian, or it means something that's of a spiritual nature, not necessarily something that's demonic or like evil. So it kind of depends on what you're asking. But so why, let's say why would I work with Belial or like a demon king? Now, a lot of people will say Belial or Baal are not demon kings. They might be ancient gods. That might be valid, sure. But because of what they've been called upon for, they might change. Because what we call, let's say you elect a representative in like a public office. What you call upon them for is going to change their nature. So just look at the other followers of Belial or Baal. Two different things, I know. And see what they've asked upon this being. What I think that you might want to get from them is possibly personal willpower in your life. Maybe even attract wealth to your life. Some, you know, money in this lifetime. And possibly bring about a sense of self-empowerment that goes beyond perhaps even the material realm. Perhaps spiritual self-empowerment. These might be things that you would call upon these beings through. And Paimon is especially good for wealth and attracting money. Those are the things that you would get if you call upon these beings. And unlike, you know, the church or Christianity or whatever, I will say just for me that on the long term, focusing on these temporary goals might not work out for your spirit. Let's not even talk about soul. Let's just talk about spirit, the natural life force within you. If you expend a lot of the natural life force within you, you can call it prana. and calling out to these beings, working with these beings, your focus is beyond what is directly within you, what is truly within you. And if you expend that, then you're going to have much less that truly wells in the deepest parts of yourself. And a lot of people focus on what's on the outside. If we focus on what's on the inside more, then it's easier to weather what is going on beyond the surface of our skin, if that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah. Thanks for that. Yeah, it totally does make sense. Because I think it's easy to get lost in certain terms, and words mean a lot to us on, you know, in occultists, spiritual practitioners, or whatever you want to call it. Again, here with problem with words. They mean a lot, though, because a lot of people don't know what asuras are. A lot of people don't know what, like in tantric Buddhism, when you have wrathful deities that you work with as well, you know, that live in the throat area. You know, some people may be like, well, why would you want to work with those? And they're very, very beneficial if you know how to do them and if you're trained in doing them, of course. But, okay, so let's go ahead and kind of divide them really fast here. So just to bring some more clarity. So we have on one side, like the independent kind of practitioner, if I'm, you know, left-hand path, right-hand path, and then the other one, the other side of the coin, we have the practitioner that is more interested in, higher pursuits, higher spiritual pursuits. Would that be correct?
Destroying the ego, not focusing on this life, and a belief in the Atman or the soul, and trying to progress that piece of oneself that is beyond the personality and the ego. That somebody who is not focused on what's in this world at all. Many people, I don't like using the word left-hand path, but on the left-hand path, we'll say, you know, this is who you are now. What do you want? Achieve what you want. Don't worry about something that you do not have a concept of that is beyond this, or perhaps in your future as a future life. Take care of yourself now. Take care of your wants and desires now. That will lead to happiness. But people who are focusing on enlightenment train themselves to basically get rid of all those desires and all those wants and all that body identification and that, you know, even life identification. And then they want to transcend. It's hard to bring these two sections of practitioners together. I fall somewhere not necessary, just kind of like a nebulous way in between. But I think that there should be a way for different ideas on one side and this side to come together. And it's not necessarily right hand versus left hand. I think it's more transcendent practitioners or believers versus people who are focused on their wants and desires now, or their personal empowerment, so that they have that power within their lives, within who they are right now. And, you know, there's plenty of those people don't believe in reincarnation, so that might be all that there is to them in their mind, so that's completely fine. But they're I feel like I want to bridge the gap, and I'm not really sure exactly how.
Yeah, it seems like a pretty tough job, though, because we have this dichotomy in the magic community. I like to call it the magic community. We have this dichotomy, and one side is very fiercely independent, very individual, you know, focus on our desires, focus on our own power, focus on your own self, forget everything else. And then on the other side, it's like, well, I am important and I want to take care of myself and my means as well. But I also know that life is very perilous sometimes. It's very brief for, you know, a lot of times. I want to focus on something higher. I want to take these energies or these powers or whatever you want to call it and focus on something, some kind of higher pursuits. So in order to bridge the gap, wouldn't it be a good idea? Do you think it would be a good idea for a person to both explore parts of both, to have one foot in one area and one foot in another one, and to kind of feel it out through experience? Or would you just say, like, just pick a side and kind of stay with it? And if you fail at that, go to the other. Like, what would you say would be the better
well,
method?
I'll tell you what I'm doing, and the reason why I get contacted by vastly more left-hand pathers than right-hand pathers or Buddhists or Hindus. I get contacted by a lot of Hindus, but there's a lot of Hindus. Population wise, I get percentage wise, I get contacted by way more left-hand pathers and Satanists, which is if anybody watches Game of Thrones out there. It's kind of like I'm Clegane and I end up with a band of fire worshippers. If you can interpret that, that's kind of usually where I'm at. So what I do is I don't like to judge something before I understand it. I don't. So I will analyze a book and I will try to get rid of all of my bias. I will analyze another person. I'll try to get rid of all my bias. It's not even just true with magic or spirituality. I'm looking at that person's relationship to their path and how they understand it. And if they're achieving what they understand, and if they're lying to themselves about their achievements. If I can see somebody who is not lying to themselves about their achievements, understands their path and has a clear vision very far in the future, then that person to me is worth listening to. That person to me is worth analyzing. Because what I try to do when I'm analyzing either a teaching or a person, I try to get rid, I just go complete observer mode, just complete observation. And I try to judge somebody based on their own path, not mine, not my own criteria, but theirs. And if they meet their own criteria fully, I'll probably listen to them. But the vast majority of people, even in the occult community, even the magic community, even the spiritual community, do not meet up to their criteria at all. Whether it be so-called right-hand path or left-hand path or people going towards enlightenment. There's a lot of talk of, there's so many terms that are thrown around that people don't understand. Me and you understand them, but like shadow work, for instance, I hear a lot of people talking about it. And then I watch them, what they say, what they post, or I'll even talk to them. And I'm like, it's just a key term for them. It's just like vocabulary. They don't really understand what it means. They don't understand what enlightenment means. They don't really understand what karma means. They're using it because they've heard it. Their environment, even their social environment online, has conditioned what they will say. That doesn't mean that they engage with the environment that has inflicted itself upon them, or more importantly, engage with themselves. And honestly, it's like I worship the Divine Mother Kali Ma. I've been with her for, I don't know what, 11 years, 10 years. I don't know, I'm 30. But I get a lot of people contacting me thinking they know about Kali Ma. They've been working with her for about a year. They talk about how dark she is and like how vindictive or revengeful she is. And I'm like, what the hell are you talking about? Because once you work, so all these symbols that are Kali Ma, once you get to the heart of them, you're given a vision of a being that is completely composed of light. If you think that she actually has heads around her neck, or she actually has a trishula, or she actually has a head and she's holding up a bowl with blood pouring in it from the head. By the way, these are either demon heads or the different letters of the Sanskrit alphabet, depending on your interpretation. If you really think that she looks like that and that is your interpretation of her, then you don't know what the fuck you're talking about, period. She is a being of light. And if you see her, you will see her. And there's been people who have tried to curse me that have seen her and told me about it. And they were my friends at the time. Over time, I realized that there's a reason why that Divine Mother kept me away from them. But in conclusion, you either know what you're talking about or you don't. And also, all the paths are nebulous. You have to have a personal relationship, or you can take up the dogma of the church or the dogma of the left-hand path. There's plenty of dogmas out there, but these seem to be the two that are taking control of the cult community. I don't take any other dogma than myself. That's it. That's all. I don't know what I am. Don't know exactly who I am, but I know what I do. And I think that I know what I know. And that's it.
You live in a moment, my friend. That's great. You live in a moment, you know, and you get your experiences. I appreciate that. So we're going to go ahead and continue a little bit with my end, I guess, on my show here. So I wanted to kind of dive into this a little bit, because back to the right-hand, left-hand path dichotomy, like on this part of the subject, because these are two terms that are much less defined in Western occultism than they are in the East. And that right there in itself opposes a problem, in my opinion, because people will look at the left-hand path, for instance. Let's just say that, right? First of all, in Western occultism, people that use the term right-hand path are left-hand pathers. People that don't, that work with more like, if I could say, lighter energies or some might say fluffy energies, I don't know, or whatever, they don't refer to themselves as right-hand path. They just call themselves for whatever they feel they are. If they practice a system of ceremonial magic, they're going to be a ceremonial magician. If they practice modern witchcraft, they're a modern witch, or they're just a witch, or whatever, any of those subcategories in between. But speaking of the left-hand path, because that truly is one of the most, in my opinion, one of the most misunderstood, and it's the most controversial, as we know, but it's one of the most misunderstood because you know about this because you're a Hindu. You know, in India, you know, you have the right and left hand, Varmachara, Dakshinachara. I think I'm pronouncing them. Maybe I'm mispronouncing them.
It's less of a dichotomy, but I know what you're saying. I know
exactly. Yeah, for the audience that may not have read the Vedas at all, or the Bhagavad Gita, or anything Hindu related, I'm sure there's plenty out there that haven't. In those terms, in the Sanskrit terms, and also in the Tamil alphabet, the Tamil, like South Indian terms, they're much less defined. What makes those paths what they are the acts of worship and the acts of devotion and any kind of ritual that they do in those, any type of puja or any types of devotional rituals that they have. That's what makes them. So if a person is a left-hand path Hindu, they may do a lot of rituals that involve being at a graveyard, you know, being at the ash grounds and doing some work there, spending like days or if not weeks or even months there. You know, some more extreme cases, some of the sadhus may be there for like years, just like around dead bodies being burned all day. And that is their, I'm going to use a generic term here for a moment, that is their shadow work that they do, you know. But they don't do it necessarily to bring up their shadows. They do it because that's their way of merging with divinity, by going into the muck, going to the death, getting to know the deepest, one of the most feared things on earth is death in all civilizations. So they face death head on. That's their type of work, you know. And Western occultism, the left-hand path work is much more modern. It's been something that hasn't really been around very long. You know, I would say like after Crowley's era, you know, getting into like the 1950s and 60s, getting into Anton LaVey, that's when it kind of started really for Westerners for the most part. Even though there have always been, not always, but for centuries there have been, like the Gaesha has been around for centuries. The Arbitel has been around for a long time, these different grimoires. But a lot of that knowledge was kept. And if you're in the Abrahamic systems, you weren't really supposed to touch some of those other things, you know.
And it is very strange. I don't mean to intersect too much.
Oh, but, no.
It is very strange that, so in a lot of Hindu texts, you'll see somebody's, you know, it'll just be said, this person did this by magic, and it won't display the magic, and it won't name the person. Mm-hmm. So this pops up every now and then. It's not that common. It's pretty rare. But then you see that, and you're like, wait a minute, where's the rest of the information? The information is shared, but it pops up in Hindu texts going back thousands of years. It's pretty remarkable. Like, it'll just say, like, I'm not sure if that's Srimad Bhagavatam or not, but like, you know, this person killed this person with black magic, and then that'll be the whole description, and then there's nothing else. So yeah, it's there's been things happening for a while, but you know, continue, you know.
Oh yeah. I was just gonna say. I guess my point of kind of my long rambling on like the left hand path in particular is because it's less defined in like in its true forms, right? It's much less defined, but here in the West, particularly in the United States, Canada, England, where we have where a lot of Western occultists do practice that, they give it a very very opaque definition, you know. Which if you ask left-hand path is okay, like what does your work entail, they might say like you were, we were saying earlier, you know, before, they might be like, well, I might invoke Belial, excuse me, I might invoke some form of the devil, some kind of
Beelzebub.
Yeah, some kind of deific mask of Lucifer, something like that. You know, they may do things like that. But the reasoning being is because here's the dichotomy I'm going to bring up really fast. So in a left-hand path community, people will work with dark imagery, dark figures, dark shadows, oftentimes because they themselves experience powerlessness in their life. Many of them were abused, come from broken homes, have had severely broken relationships, were violated in their life. And then on the non-left-hand path, what they may say right, you know, right-hand path or whatever, people who just do straight up spiritual work, or they may practice occultism that doesn't involve like working with dark energies and shadows. They in their life may not have had such deep pain like that. So there's not much of a need to gather more and more power and to lift oneself up and to become a god. Excuse me for saying that. So their motivations may be different. And I think that's where the dichotomy comes from. The dichotomy comes from the main part of that dichotomy comes from two things, in my opinion. It comes from one, the need, like why somebody would be on whatever occult path, whether it's a shadow path or non-shadow path. And then two, the dichotomy also comes with language, because we're using, you know, we're us as English speakers, and even if they're speaking Spanish or Portuguese or any other language, they're going for sources that are overwhelmingly Abrahamic. Let's just get that out of the picture. And when you're looking at the Abrahamic sources, and this is not bashing them at all, because obviously if they didn't work, they still wouldn't be in circulation, in my opinion. You know, it just they work for somebody, otherwise they wouldn't be there. But those
can we pause real quick and then we'll go to another part. Let me just start off here. All right, so this is the first part, everybody. We'll be back for a second part. All right, everyone, this is part two of our conversation with Roderick. And we were talking about left-hand, right-hand path, the duality, plus also just how it both makes sense and doesn't make sense. So let's go ahead and continue our conversation.
Yeah, so I was saying previously, there's two problems with the whole, like, with the dichotomy that we're talking about. So the first problem I was saying is the fact that, what was I saying? Like, it was, the terms are less defined. Oh, it's because people are victim. They have, like, victimhoods. They have a lot of trauma. So, you know, so that right there will inspire them to go ahead and start doing this type of magic, this type of occult work. And then the second problem is also language. Language is a huge problem, you know, because there's a lot of Abrahamic terms that are used in these ancient grimoires. So like the Bible, people can misinterpret these things too, even though they've been translated dozens of times by different writers. So one example is this. I'm gonna go ahead and use the left-hand path work for another example, because I feel that this is very appropriate. And I talk to lots of people about this, a lot. So when people talk about demonic invocations and different workings like that, if you're going to go in there's two ways of doing it, really. You can do the Goetic way, the Lesser Key of Solomon or the Greater Key, where you will use names of God to conjure up the demons. You know, so the names of God will protect you. That's like the idea. You have this like triangle of protection. But the other way is the demonology way of doing it, where they're like, well, trying to constrain these demons is quite disrespectful. So we're not going to do it that way, because I don't want to be mean to them. So I'll be nicer to them and I'll just take those names out. And so, you know, these kind of ethics kind of gets involved in it, you know, and I know there's a lot of controversy, and there's probably somebody listening now that may not like me for saying that. I'm not advocating one or the other, by the way. I'm just stating things as they are. So, I don't know. I hope I didn't ramble on too much, but there's like a dichotomy, and it comes with language, though. People really, like you were saying earlier, there were Asura, which not many left-hand path occultists are going to really even know what that is, unless, you know, they have an interest in that, in the Vedas, or Should they use Demon? Should they use Damon? What should they use? You know? And I think that the whatever your intent is, whatever your purest, truest intent as a magician, as a spiritual practitioner, is what's going to drive you to whatever method that you do. However, the problem comes down to dogma. Sometimes we get comfortable in a system too long. We should all, in my opinion, and I'm sure you agree with this, as magicians, as sorcerers, whatever you call yourself, shamans, whatever, we should always be learning and growing. That means not only focusing on our accomplishments, but focusing on what we don't know, focusing on some things that we're not quite comfortable with. And that doesn't mean, you know, if you're a person that's, if you're Buddhist, when I say get out of your comfort zone, I'm not saying go and do the Vajrayana Chud ritual. Look that up. I'm not saying anything like that. But I mean, getting out of your comfort zone, meaning expand yourself, learn a little bit more. I don't mean jump around from system to system, but whatever type of practice you're doing, you want to learn about the things that may not interest you as much. What, you know, so an example is if you're a ceremonial magician that loves planetary invocation, you're so good at it, and you're really great at astrology. Well, get out of your comfort zone and learn about deities for a little bit. Learn about Greek gods and goddesses for a little bit, or learn about Kemetic or Egyptian pantheon from that. Learn something different, because that will help you integrate language, which is the problem.
And that's very true, because what I get frustrated in is that, like, so I've studied the Abrahamic traditions quite a bit. I've read the Bible, of course, and I've interpreted some of it for myself and on a podcast. But it's strange, because even people who don't like the Bible, let's say you're working with demons, they'll still use the Bible as a center of gravity. They'll be like, okay, these are the terms that are, you know, polluting and controlling everybody, and we're just gonna take ownership of these terms, like demon, and we're gonna use that term to fight back against that center of gravity. You're still on the same planet. You're still engaging with that center of gravity, rather than trying to find a new body, and I'm using metaphors here, not actual new body, but a new body of information or new relationship to both the beings that you work with and to your inner self. You're still working by the same code that you despise. So do you want to continue to play by their game, or do you want to do something else? Because it does come back to language. So we have the word demon, you know, in Greek, daemon, it means different things. A lot of left-hand powers say, you know, these are just different, the different old gods have been classified as demons. I'm really confused as to why the same terms are used and why other terms aren't adopted. It's almost like, because of the animosity with the center of gravity that is the church, that is what left-hand pathers revolve around or relate to, even if it's in the negative. And deciding for yourself, because a lot of these entities, a lot of these beings, they're only using the names from the Bible because left-hand pathers are insistent upon them, and people who believe in the Bible are insistent upon them. But relating to these beings in a different way would be a better path, a better course. Because do we really think that just because in the Bible it says this is the one name of a being, that is their only name, that's the only way to relate to them? No, it doesn't make any sense. But choosing to use your enemy's code and trying to claim it as your own, it's a path to failure. Because if that understanding is dying, if that language is dying, if that understanding of these beings is dying, just because you do something opposite of that, that doesn't mean that it's not gonna, that you're not gonna die too, that your understanding isn't gonna die too. You're tapping into an original understanding and trying to combat it rather than doing your own thing. And that's always confused me. I'm not sure why left-hand pathers are so consumed by the Bible and relating to it in a way that is just counter rather than more nebulous and separate from. It's almost like the Bible is a gravity well, and both people who believe in it, the Christians and left-hand pathers, that is their center. Perhaps we should relate to these beings, if you believe they're more than demons, than something other than what the Bible says. That's just my idea.
Okay, so when you say center of gravity, you mean you're basically saying that, for an example, that using a term like demon will be just hung up on the Abrahamic traditions and the Abrahamic terms.
If you understand it as if you understand it as an adversarial term, we're like, okay, they view it as that adversarial term. So I'm going to view it as my heart term, my compassionate term, my relation term. You're still using the Bible as a center of gravity.
Okay, I see what you're saying. It's similar to what you're saying is similar to Elric, who has been on my podcast before. You know, he was, I think that, yeah, the first time I had him on, he said something about, I asked him about Satan. I'm like, you know, what do you think about people working with Satan? He's like, well, that's basically the dark Christianity. It's Christianity that's reversed. He had something kind of, those weren't his exact words, but he said something very, very similar to that. I'm like, oh, okay, I get it now.
You know what's really weird about Satan is that understanding of Satan, the term goes way back, but we get the idea as far as what Satan is from Surtur from the Norse pantheon, a being of fire. You know, he lives in a world of, he lives in a realm of perfect light and perfect fire. And if you work with him and if he likes you, then you're not going to be scorched. We get a lot of the ideas of what Satan is in the realm that exists from Muspelheim, as well as Surtur. Christianity has blended this because Christianity is known for, you know, bringing other cultures in or renaming things so that it's easier for the population to accept the ideas that they're trying to push. So the idea of Satan and fire, the sad truth is that, you know, there's, I think, 3 or 4 mentions of hell being fire in the Bible. Very few. But most of our idea of Satan literally just comes from an adaptation of Surtur from the Norse pantheon living in Muspelheim. So, you know, who really is, like, what really is Satan? Is it just an adaptation by the church so that we can understand what it is, people in Europe and, you know, Northwestern Europe? Or is the Satan that we understand something that's completely commercialized? Maybe it's completely commercialized. Maybe it's something that's just adapted rather than most people are trying to understand Satan. Even Satanists, they're thinking of him in the role of Surtur. Maybe he's something more, because that's usually the adaptation that the church does. Because Sol Invictus was, the holiday that is Christmas was originally Sol Invictus, the god of soldiers in the Roman Empire, not Republic Empire, but it might have been the Republic as well. And then we, you know, the idea of Christmas, the adopting of the tree came from Germany and the Yuletide and all that. It's a piecemeal, there's many piecemeal traditions that we,
it's very dramatic, you know.
It's piecemeal and it's all tied to Christ, which, by the way, Caesar Borgia, the reason why Christ looks like he does, like obviously looks very Italian, pale skin, blue eyes. It's because I can't remember what pope it was, but the pope that was the father of Caesar Borgia decided that, hey, maybe we should just paint Jesus as the visage of my son. And then it just stuck.
It just Jesus stuck.
Never looked like white Jesus that you see. That's Caesar Borgia. And by the way, he thought himself as the reincarnation of Mars on Earth, and he's going to bring cleansing to the Earth. Very pagan. But that's the idea of Jesus that we see. It's a piecemeal thing. So our understanding should not just counter that. It should be beyond that, because we're countering something that's false to begin with. That's it.
Well, I mean, these things happen in probably the bulk of world traditions, you know, because as we share information, as the world has gotten smaller over the past 2000 years, 2500 years, even, people will paint. I mean, just take Buddhism for, you know, like getting out of the left-hand path discussion for a moment and take like Buddhism. I mean, you look at the Buddha statues in China look far different from the ones in India. You know, I mean, completely different. I mean,
are you talking about the the lucky Buddha or the Buddha with the cloth sack?
I'm just talking about the Sakyamuni Buddha, just a regular, the regular Siddhartha, Sakyamuni Buddha, like those. Yeah, the other ones were just definitely added into the pantheon later on, you know, like a Hote or Bodhidharma, Dhammo, you know. But just a regular ones. Like, I mean, that just seems to be a trend that in major religions, the religions that don't get wiped out, they either... very few of them stay 100% pure. They always like bring something else from another system or religion into it. You know, Buddhism in Japan, you know, they mix some Shinto beliefs in there. And then when you get to like Western esoteric traditions, let's just take the Golden Dawn, for instance, a very great example. You know, the Golden Dawn is like the trifecta of Hermeticism, you know, Kabbalah, and it just kind of mixes it all together so perfectly. Like,
did planetary the Golden Dawn draw a lot from the cult of Thelema or Thelema?
Thelema came after.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
Yeah, yeah. Thelema is considered modern magic, but the Golden Dawn is also considered modern magic. Yeah. So it just there's always a sense of borrowing. So like I think you're onto something when you say like let's keep to the pure origin of things. I know you didn't say it in those exact words, but that's rather difficult to do. It's not impossible. So I mean, going back to the Satan thing, I'm thinking like if a person really wanted to work with the satanic current, like the pure unadulterated non-Levian current, adversarial current, I would just say
Hebrew.
Well, the adversarial current will be looking at whatever the dominant religion is right now, not back then, but right now, which is the same as it was like when those things are kind of being written, Christianity, some sort of Abrahamic faith. And they would basically just take the role of, they would agree at this, the role of the serpent in there. Yeah, because he was the adversary to God in the garden. You know, he's like, okay, this is the adversary because this is the bigger, this is the majority.
Knowledge versus the blindness that the light provides when you just accept that blind faith being. Knowledge versus blind faith and blindness by light. Is that correct?
Okay. Yeah.
Because the knowledge serpent thing pops up in multiple cultures. Like, there's a reason why we have two serpents that go around for hospitals and things like that. You know, it's Nagas and in India,
right?
The Greeks that, well, it originally came from the Greeks that moved to India, and usually we get Poseidon from the Hindus, actually. But anyway, go ahead.
No. I mean, you're right, though. You know, I was pretty much finished with my point, though. But like, I was just saying, if you're gonna be the adversary, you will just be the rebel against the dominant religion, whatever that is. So right now, the dominant religion is still Christianity. But
is it? I feel like maybe it might be like
in America. It is.
I feel like it's a trifecta of Abrahamic beliefs because they feed on each other and they also war with each other.
They do. But I was going to say though that the up and coming and emerging dominant religion is science. That's the new one.
Well, it was at one point, and now it's up and coming again, and science is starting to get into cognitive issues. That will prove certain meditative techniques and mind expansion. But anyway, yes.
But yeah. So right now, here in America, if you live in the U.S. and Canada, it's still Christianity. I mean, yeah, there's a lot. I would agree with you that all the Abrahamic faiths have a humongous influence around the world. And actually, this is a fun factoid. China is getting more Christianized. Believe it or not, there's
the Communist Party is really trying to prevent that, but
they are trying to prevent that. they're probably going to do whatever they can in their power. But like, think about South Korea. South Korea became Christian really quickly in like 30 years. Like most people just converted. Like
they didn't have another option though. Like it's like, okay, we have to either accept American ideas or we get destroyed by North Korea. So they're placed in an impossible situation. And I'm sure there's plenty of still Buddhist South Koreans, but they're in place in a situation where it's like Either we conform with the powers that control us, or we get destroyed by the enemy that will destroy us. There's a no-sum game. They had no way to win, so they had to decide. They had to come up. They had to become us, basically.
Yeah, I know that's another subject, though. But going back to this whole bridging this dichotomy. So what are some ways that a person can successfully bring the two together?
That's such a good.
I know it's a loaded so question. Good, I get it. I totally get it, man.
I have so many ways. So what we're going to do is we're going to make this part two, and then I'm going to stop it, and then we'll start it again. But everybody listening, this has been me and Roderick talking. This is part two. I'm not exactly sure what the fellow's going to be. Well, I did know in the first part, but we'll work it out in the I'm going to work it out in the postscript. At any rate, we'll go ahead and go to part two right now.
So how are you bridging the gap, or how should one bridge the gap?
Okay, we're good. Say that again.
So about bridging the gap. So how can, I know it's a loaded question, how can one successfully bring the two together so that they're not living this dichotomous kind of.
Oh, between left-hand path and either people who are trying to ascend or become enlightened, or perhaps even the right-hand path, though I think that most people in the right-hand path wouldn't even call themselves that. It'd probably be the left-hand path describing them. This gap between the left-hand path and people who work with demons versus those who try to transcend the physical body. How do we bridge that gap? So really, I think that everybody's stuck in self-conception, because how many yogis or enlightened beings have used anything like the term left-hand path, or honestly, even the term evil? These are relative terms. People are trying to figure out where they are relative to what they believe and what they do, but in reality, they don't exist. Like, like the sage, I don't remember what her name was, in The Matrix says, how do you bend the spoon? There is no spoon. And for instance, I'll give another artistic example. So when I'm designing something in the program that is Tinkercad, it's something that I can use to basically feed the program into a 3D printer, and then it produces this thing. And then maybe I can bronze cast it and take out the wax, whatever it is, or I can just create something. The only reason that there's a plane with a bunch of boxes on it, that plane is not a surface. You can do whatever you want in the space. The only reason that plane is there is so that the mind doesn't get too confused or off balance. Because honestly, the whole program is just based on what you put in that space, that white void. But they put that plane there because that's what we're used to. Because we're used to the natural center of gravity. We're used to the natural center of our cultural association, our religious association. Our understanding of what is up and down. Mm-hmm. That's why the plane is there. That's why we think of left-hand path versus right-hand path. That's why we think of it. Because without that plane, without that understanding, we wouldn't know where we are. And then once we figure out that duality doesn't exist, that plane actually doesn't exist, that it was never there to begin with, then we can discover ourselves in a way that we never have before. So also, how to bridge the gap in a more practical way. That's meta. How to bridge the gap in a practical way. Decide what you value, what you care about. Decide if you just care about your own interests, or it's a combination of your interests and other people's interests. And decide how you can further your interests and the people that you care about's interests. And if you only care about your own interests, then you further your own interests. And perhaps if you draw your circle wider, if you feel like what you're doing spiritually will either benefit everybody or is good for everybody in some way, then do that. That also defeats the plane, though it might sound like a spectrum for me saying it. That also defeats the plane. You have to work out from yourself, from what you're interested in, to if you're interested in other people or what you want your interest to produce in the outer world, and then perhaps humanity at large, anywhere in there. I like to think of it not as like a left versus right hand path, but like inner versus outer. If you only care about your own benefit in whatever way, shape, or form, whether it be, you know, your own personal enlightenment or you getting 50 G's, you create that circle and you work within that circle. You work within that circle. If you care about yourself and your family and your friends, draw your circle. Work within that circle. And keep in mind that these circles aren't necessarily smaller or bigger. I'm just using it as another analogy. If you want to work for everybody's best interest and you think that you can actually do that and you think that you actually are working towards that and you're not lying to yourself, because most of us on the spiritual path, whatever we're on, are lying to ourselves in some way, you draw your circle much bigger. Circumference everywhere. Wait, what was it? Padmasi Okananda said, center everywhere, circumference nowhere. If you can be that, you're an amazing person. If you can focus on yourself and really focus on yourself and not lie to yourself, it's pretty amazing. Because a lot of people who work in magic, they really focus on getting things. And then those things are always short-sighted. Like, I don't know, like 99% of the time, anything that you want physically is short-sighted. I've experienced this multiple times with spells and magic. I'm not just talking about it because I'm more towards right-hand path. I'm talking about it because I've experienced it. The things that I want when I actually get them, the material things or relationships, when I get them, not all relationships, I'm in pretty good relationships now, but when I get them, it's like, I just wanted to want. I didn't know what I wanted. I just wanted to want. I was seeking. I was grabbing at the world, grabbing at reality, not realizing who the hell I was or what I wanted. And if you don't encounter that on your spiritual path at some point, either ego is huge or you're a very spiritual being. And the latter is more appetizing. And it's the one that usually people take. So really, it's a journey of interest and what you want, and decide who you want to include in your circle and of wants, of what you want for other people. And if it's just you, and a lot of people think that when it's just you, it'll help everybody else. If that's the case, then go for it. You have to decide where your personal bubble is. That's it. Where's your personal bubble? That's it.
I mean, that makes a lot of sense that you say that. I guess it just brings us right back to the intent, the big question, the question of what are you trying to achieve? Like, what is your main like raison d'être, if I can say, like in magic? And this can change for some people. I know if I speak of myself, it's pretty much been the same the entire time. You know, learn more about myself.
Oh, I haven't. I'm glad I haven't been.
I mean,
I see a piece of shit.
I mean, I'm just, you know, in order to learn about ourselves in magic, we do, you know, we find certain types of work. We experiment with certain types of work. There are some people who, and I've done lots of it, the chaos magic approach, you know, which is a lot, I could say, like more non-linear, if you will.
I still do that. Don't worry. I still do that. And I do blood magic.
Yeah, you do. You do. Definitely. I just find the chaos magic approach to be quite intuitive. And if you don't like something, you can just disregard, you know, just discard it a little bit and just not even, you know, just keep it moving. Just keep it going. One thing that both.
Can I flex somebody real quick? I will say that Andre Vitamus, mm-hmm. just type in, you know, Andre Vitamus. He's very good at his chaos magic book is really good. So
it's very good. Yeah.
Yeah. If anybody wants to look up chaos magic, look up Andre Vitamus and you might find some good books.
Hands-on chaos. Actually, I will throw it out there. I'm pretty sure I have permission to do it. Vitamus and I are working on a book together right now.
I heard.
Yeah. Yeah. We're working on a book. He's going to write it and I'm going to illustrate it. That's really,
Oh, nice.
That's all I can say about that right now.
You're actually a really good illustration, by the way. Like, you're a good drawer.
Oh, thanks. Thank you.
I can say that as an artist. You're pretty good at, like, you're good at illustration.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much. But what I was going to say, though, is kind of going back to the dichotomy a little bit. I kind of want to talk a little bit about that. So on one hand, you have self-focused ritual, self-focused magic, you know, becoming empowered. And on the other hand, you have more selfless acts, right? People that are more interested in merging with the divine or source.
Can I say something real quick on that?
Yes.
So there's a lot of authors that I read and people I've talked to that will say, I don't know anyone that is not self-interested or interested in other than themselves or their children. A lot of people's experiences are experiencing selfish people, and that will cloud your worldview. And I've Sorceress Cagliostro, she's very powerful, but she said that as well. It's people's experiences can color their vision of reality. Not necessarily you, but I'm just saying that it can shape the direction that your ideology or understanding travels. But anyway, yeah.
No, you're good. Yeah, I just wanted to kind of highlight those two parts of the path for a moment, just like a little bit. Like, oh, so on one side, yeah, people that are interested in spiritual, you know, sustaining, merging with the source or divine or whatever you want to call it, you know, they have some kind of passion for what most of us would call very higher spiritual pursuits, right? And then the other one, some may say self-deification, which is just disclaimer, everybody. When I say self-deification, I'm not saying you're becoming a god, like a real god or anything like that. You know, becoming a god is really meant to be a metaphor for one that has full awareness on the choices that they make in life, a person that takes control in their life in that way. You know, so that's really what the like self-deification means, as I understand it. It means that. But there's also this idea in left-hand path circles of self-empowerment. And again, as we said earlier, if you come from like a victimized background, if you've been violated or something really, really traumatic happened in your life, you're going to do whatever you can to get into that primal essence of yourself and become as powerful as you can to get over that. So with that, people will learn things like hexes and karma just goes right out the window. Open up the window, get a big bucket of karma and toss it right the fuck out of it. Because that's pretty much what people do. They don't, because when it comes to like casting, they're like, what karma? What are you talking about? We're just the complete opposite on the other side of the coin, you know? For me personally, I pay attention to karma. I pay attention to cause and effect because it's so visible. It's something that makes a lot of sense when I look at nature, the way I observe nature and natural order. It makes sense to me personally that there's some kind of cause and effect karmic thing going on. I mean, and every little aspect, you know. You know, when a person is born and they're like playing Mozart at age 4 without any lessons, I mean, how the fuck is that not karma? You know, sorry, I'm just saying, you know. Oh, it just happens to be really good at playing Mozart at 4 years old. I don't understand where it came from. You know what I mean?
You know what's really funny is that so this is actually from a video game, and I don't actually mean it like super serious, but I'll tell people that I hang out with, Coincidence is a dirty word. Watch your mouth.
I like that. I like that. Coincidence is a dirty word. Watch your mouth. That's a great quote, man. I love it.
Yeah.
I might have to post that on Facebook and put your name under it as a quotier, you know.
Please do. That'd be amazing.
Yeah. But really, you know, so we have, anyway, I guess I'm going on a little bit, just going with the dichotomy, because I want the listeners to really think about this for a moment. If you're listening and you consider yourself a non-left-hand pather, because you don't call yourself right-hand path, you're a spiritual person that has pursuits of living a more peaceful life, less stressed life, and you want to merge with the divine in some form. Or if you're a person that does a lot of dark work and you're really into invoking tons of demons, you know, maybe you invoke all 72 of the goetic demons. I don't know. I think that anybody on the left-hand path that refers to themselves as a left-hand path and works deeply with dark energies should maybe want to examine the idea of deity or God for a moment. And I don't mean the Abrahamic version. I just mean like just clear cut across the board, unnameable source, unnameable intelligence that we all kind of can sort of tap into and recognize. And I think this is really important because if you are working with shadow energies for self-empowerment, it's a good idea to sort of examine the self that wants to get self-empowered, I think, to go to the root of the desire of that. And if you do that, you may come across, and I'm not a guru, I'm not like any kind of spiritual advisor at all. I'm just a person who is exploring this idea with you right now. That's all I am. But if you look at like, you know, if you're a person that has had a lot of power taken away from you in life, and you are looking at ways of getting it back, and you're utilizing it through ritual, I would say look deeply into the person who has the desires. Look at the one that's the victim. However way, I'm not going to say how to do it, but I'm just saying try to do it. And on the other side of the coin, if you're a person that many call right-hand path, I mean, I'm guilty of using that term as well, and you are interested in Buddhahood or becoming enlightened or something like that, examine the idea of you as the human being here on earth right now carrying karmas and whatever deeds you're doing, and maybe for a moment look at your shadow. And I don't mean like, I'm not saying do shadow work, I'm saying look at your shadow, look at your dark side, look and see if you have a dark side there. Because I feel that too often, this is my criticism of like the kind of new age community a little bit, like my criticism is some people can take it, the dogma, to the other end. Just like you have people who are, they take the adversarial dogma to the extreme where they didn't want anything to do with Jesus or the church. And, you know, like you were saying before, that they're still using Abrahamic terms to refer to what they're working with. Yeah. But I feel like a lot of new agers, I'm saying new agers because, you know, people you see in the metaphysical bookstores and whatnot. Nothing wrong with that, by the way. Now, plenty of friends that are into that and stuff as well. I've dipped into it a lot off and on over the years if I see a really good book or something. But anyway, I think that what I'm trying to say, my long ramble here, is that if a person that identifies with being holistically spiritual, you know, yoga, veganism, whatever, I think it's a good idea for them to notice their shadow self, meaning like the sides of themselves that they don't like as much. You know, an example is like, I can give for myself, I love heavy metal music. I'm a diehard metal. I fucking love metal. I listen to metal all the time. I really do. Haven't listened to it that much lately, but I like it. And some of my new ager friends just don't get it. They don't get why I like stuff like that. They have no idea. Why do you like music like that? I can't understand the words. It's loud. It's very abrasive sounding. It's angry. Like, do you like being angry? I'm like, I like this. But I think that they should look at something like that, because a lot of them have those kinds of backgrounds themselves where they did a lot of drugs in their youth and they would go to parties and they would listen to Metallica or something or whatever, you know. Now and then they just kind of, they grow into this, what they call spiritual maturity, and then they disregard things like that, they discard things like that. And then they no longer want to look back on those times. But I'm saying maybe they should listen to Metallica like they used to for a little bit. Like, what's wrong with that? Maybe they should eat a burrito that has some fat in it or something, you know, like what's wrong with that? I'm just saying, like, get to know that imperfect part of themselves.
Yeah. I think it's important for everybody to like check their privilege and how far they've come and understand that how far other people have to come, and think that just because you've come that far or that you think you've come this far doesn't mean that somebody else doesn't have to go through it in another way. Because if they, you know, mm-hmm. if somebody else has to go through it another way, that's completely fine. And we don't have to view ourselves as being better than them. Perhaps maybe they're doing their own journey and we don't have to judge their journey and judge what they work with or what they're trying to manifest, and just leave them alone and just be ourselves. And if we feel like we're on a better path, just be there for that person rather than forcing ourselves onto others.
It's pretty wise. It's actually pretty benevolent as well. You know, it's like live and let live. You know, you're starting to sound more like a Taoist the more I talk to you tonight.
We're talking about I practice the drunken monkey style of martial arts.
Hunter and I were discussing Chinese religion earlier before we recorded. We were talking about Taoism and Buddhism, and I was telling him like how difficult it is to find really authentic religious Taoism, you know. And I'm sitting here going, he sounds like a Taoist right now saying like that, you know, live and let live, let nature take its course. It's a beautiful thing, you know.
Everybody is traveling their own path, and I think it's very important. Like for me, I'm very so, like, I call myself gray, but I, to be honest, I'm very much on the side of the light, in fairness. And I but there's a difference between being light that is forced upon you rather than light who is just like, hey, you know, I'm just chilling back here. Why don't you, if you want to come over here, that's fine. Just don't. It's very important that we don't force our ideology or our energy onto people. And we just allow people to gestate as they are. And I know way more left-hand pathers, than like vastly more left-hand pathers and Satanists than I do anybody who's like me. And it feels really weird because, it almost feels like I can, and this might be a little bit like egocentrical, but for some reason I just get this urge that I can just do more in the dark. And I can, if anybody wanted to be come towards my section of things, it'd be way better for me to just be in the dark than to just be, you know, just like completely associate and be with people that believe exactly like me, because like, what are we gonna say to each other? I mean, like, we think the same things. But if anybody wants to bounce ideas off me, that's while I'm in the dark with everybody else, that'd be cool. I don't go out to like, I'm not a missionary. I'm going to like try to like convert people or bring people to my idea. But hey, I'm just chilling here in the dark, just setting out some rays. If you want to come over here, you can. If not, that's fine. Not intrusive at all, for sure.
Yeah, it's a pretty tough subject, I think, especially right now, because ever since a certain, I won't name any names, but ever since a certain bad thing happened with a certain well-known occultist on the online community.
I love this.
I'm being super vague, right? Ever since that happened,
I love it when you're skating around a black hole, but I love it. It's okay.
I know, because I'm like purposely trying to like make it known and trying to conceal it at the same time. So it's quite a tactic. But yeah, but anyway, ever since a certain occult bad boy, you know, fucked up on something recently, I've had several messages from people that are black magicians that were outraged by it, like just not happy about it, and felt this is giving us a bad rap. You know, it's hard enough being who we are in society as it is today. And like it's almost like a whole nother satanic panic is going to come back up. So now we're getting to a point, I think the left-hand path in particular, I know we've been talking a lot about the left-hand path particularly, but because it's very loaded with a lot of content. So I'm bringing it up now.
Well, here's the thing, man. Like I've been getting crap like that about worshiping Kali Ma for, I don't know, as long as I've had a YouTube channel, about people who think that they know who Kali Ma is. And then I'm actually speaking in favor of who you're talking about, ironically, because I actually don't like them. But I've been messaged from Christians and even some Hindus who think that Kali Ma is evil and that she's like the worst thing ever for years. And
I think she's lovely.
Right. And, personally, and, you know, I've been feeling this for years. And a lot of the messages of who we're talking about, I've seen directed towards him. I'm like, dude, just man up. Grab your fucking balls, because like I've been getting this for a long time, and now you're getting a little bit of heat. Chill out. You got this. Just like I don't like this guy, but at the same time, come on, man. Like you'll be okay. You don't have to cry. You're gonna be okay. You'll be able to continue your practice, even though I don't like his practice. Like just chill out. Don't allow everything that's coming at you to be the force through which that you decide to change yourself and not say what you want to say. If you're going to say something, then say it. If you want to say something, then say it. Show people who you are. If not, if you actually do want to change, then change. These are your options. These are the options that you have. Decide what you're going to do. Either change as a result of the energy that you're getting, or decide to stand firm with whatever you are. And that, honestly, that's advice for everybody. Like, that's not, I mean, just decide your stance. And if you start to feel pained from the energy that you're getting or the comments or whatever it is, then just withdraw and figure out yourself, work with the beings that you want to work with, and then come back when you're ready. These are your options. It's not a huge deal. Nobody needs to, nobody who's in this situation needs to cry about it. Just do you. And come back stronger if you want to come back stronger.
I think this is good advice.
I think this is pretty good advice.
Thank you for that.
It's like you can, because crying about something or being sad about what's coming your way, sure, you might get some sobs from your fans or whatever, and that's fine. But what is it going to do for you? It's not going to do anything. Decide what you're going to do and do it. Decide your position and do it. These are the options. There's no other options available. So just either be you or change. That's it. Oh, I know we're reaching the end of this segment, but we can go to another one in a second here.
Oh no, we're good, man. We're good. I was gonna wrap it up too for this one though, but a little bit of editing. Pause. Anyway, yeah, we go to another segment like a few minutes on another one. That's cool.
All right, sounds good. All right, this is the end of part 3, and we'll be back for part 4.
Yeah, you made a really good point. Thanks for that. Just be who you are and be honest with yourself. And magic is a really good way to get to know oneself. And everything, and I've really been enjoying this dialogue with you tonight. This has been great, talking about the dichotomy issue. I'm forgetting the name of it because we've been talking for a while now.
Well, it's non-dualism versus binary occultism.
That's it, non-dualism versus binary occultism. Yeah, it's great though, and honestly, this is something that I want to see this happen more with spiritual and occult content creators. I would like to see the community talk about this more too, because we're approaching this time right now where I think these labels, they're even becoming less and less defined. They already were kind of less defined to begin with, but they're becoming even like more that way. And I know Ian Ferguson and Anna Menorah, shout out to Ian Ferguson and Anna Menorah, who've been on my podcast. Both of them were saying that the future, it's going to be a lot less people calling themselves left empath and, you know, people calling themselves this. It's going to be just more people just doing ritual, people just doing.
We can only hope. That is very positive. Yeah. We can only hope.
Yeah. I kind of think so too. I mean, I know, like, because of a certain rogue occultist that's been, you know, making some negative headlines lately. I've been talking to people personally that have been like, you know, it's not even really about these labels. It's really just about the results, doing the work and becoming better. Like here's another shout out. I had Uriel Zariel has been on this podcast probably about at the time of this recording. I believe he was 3 episodes before this, if I'm not mistaken, but he's a longtime practitioner of Luciferian magic, chaos magic, lots of left-hand path stuff, very, very lefty guy. But he's like, when I've spoken to him privately, he's like, I'm just going beyond labels these days. I'm really going beyond all that. Like, none of it really means anything. You know, you get to a point to where your results end up becoming so, they end up causing such a change in your life and in your psyche that you're like, I don't even see these two sides anymore. Like, I can see light and shadow, but they both make each other. Like, when we go outside on a sunny day and we see our shadow on the sidewalk, we don't think much of it because it's so normal. We know that the sun is shining above our head and it's casting that shadow, but we don't really go, I'm only going to focus on my shadow when I'm walking, you know, or I'm just, we're kind of, it's, you know what I mean? I mean, that's my cheesy metaphor, but it becomes together. It's like, it's one thing.
And without shade, there's no color or definition to anything that we can see.
Yeah, it's just there. It becomes a part of just what is. And that's, I think the end of all this is really, I'm gonna go ahead and say it, man. I think with any system of spirituality in existence, including the Abrahamic religions, when a person goes deep enough in something, eventually what will happen is they will lightly, ever so slightly, touch on non-duality. They will touch on the fact that they are not who they think they are as a human being, as a person, as a thing, or whatever. It always goes to, at some point in time, what the wisdom of Advaita Vedanta has touched on, what Zen has touched on, what, like, these really deep mystery techniques have touched on, is that it's just something that we can't explain in words, period. That's not a thing. You know, like, if you touch something deep enough, it's going to go in that direction, I think. So with
but
that,
it's more than a feeling, so how can we explain it?
Exactly. And with that, I'm going to close this conversation. Hunter Salazar, brother, it's been great having you back on, man. It's always a pleasure talking to you. It's been a while, and I've had just a blast talking about all this stuff with you, and I definitely want to have you
on here.
Yeah. So everybody, check out Hunter Salazar's channel on YouTube. It is named after himself.
It is.
Hunter Salazar, spelled with an S-A-L-A-Z-A-R. That's the last name. And you can reach me at Roderick Z, or I always say this really bad joke, or Zed if you're in Canada, at protonmail.com. I appreciate love letters, not hate letters. Thanks for the love letters, everybody. And I will see you in the next episode.
Sounds good.